You're listening to Connecting Faith, and after a great conversation with Jeff Mannion about living an extraordinary life one day at a time, let's talk about keeping the mission clear, especially in midlife. We'll talk 40-40 vision with Peter Greer, president of Hope International. Talked with Peter some time ago, and here's a portion of that interview.
We have an opportunity to say, yes, our bodies are falling apart, and it is a slow process, and I don't know anyone who enjoys it. But the question is, how are we going to think about this? How are we going to respond to this reality? These bodies, yes, they are wasting away. Yes, we do want to take care of them, but it is possible to inwardly be renewed. And so each of these issues, I think it's a choice. It's a choice of how we think about aging. It's a choice about how we think about our finances. It's a choice about how we deal with disappointment. All of these areas, whether it's friendship or finances, midlife is a time to recalibrate our vision and to say what matters, what is the perspective that we want to have, and to boldly, not being afraid, to look at the end of life and then say, how would we live differently if we kept that day, that time, in the forefront of our mind?
And I think we all probably can think of a person or two, or maybe several, who seem to have grown up gracefully and continue to, in their senior years, live with hope and joy and contentment. And so is there some value in us sort of connecting with an older mentor to just help us walk through this, even if they're just like Greg, about 10 years older than you, right?
I think that friendship, especially intergenerational friendship, is one of the greatest gifts that we have. I don't think there's any question of that. And, you know, there are some people that have talked about how, for many people, the modern church experience that segregates groups based on age, we miss the beauty of intergenerational friendships. And so definitely walking with Greg has been a gift, or walking with my grandpa has been a gift. When you get to see people that are living fully, with vitality, have made peace with a lot of these issues, that is a gift. And I think in our culture, I think we've gotten this wrong. I think we've associated new and shiny as things that have value, and we've discounted the old. And yet in many other cultures around the world, there is much more of a celebration of aging, the accumulation of wisdom, the accumulation of all of these experiences, and saying, these are a gift. And so we can kind of, you know, mourn the physical aspect of the aging process, or we can actually celebrate. Think of the wisdom, think of the experiences, think of all that we have, and then how can we use those experiences and pour them into the lives of others? So I hope there is a change perspective on aging. And again, this gift of aging, the gift of experience that should be shared in relationships with others.
We were just joking a little bit before the program began that you, thanks to your wise wife, had an opportunity to kind of recalibrate your travel and your work. No matter what our age is, we still can make some changes, and it would seem like pausing and investing in friendships and relationships probably is a good first step to take, isn't it?
Yeah, and the book of Ecclesiastes has some of those great lines about a cord of three strands is not easily broken, or when you fall down, you know, pity the person who has no one to help them up. It's one of the things that even in the under-the-sun perspective, even as the author of Ecclesiastes is looking for meaning and satisfaction, one of the best conclusions that he comes with is this gift of friendships. And I believe it is. I believe it is one of life's greatest gifts. It's the gift of friendship, the gift of relationships. And yet, just personally, I spent the early years as I was trying to grow an organization, I spent my time building resume virtues instead of eulogy virtues. I spent my life thinking about growth rates and about success in a very narrow definition of success. And I just am so grateful for my wife who called me on it. And we had a moment, and one of the things coming out of that was I wrote my resignation letter, and I gave it to Laurel, and I told her, if you ever feel that I am not fulfilling my job as your husband and as dad to these precious kids, I would love for you to mail my resignation letter, and I will walk away, because what I do vocationally is not as important as the job that I have to love God and to love you and to love these kids. So she hadn't sent the letter yet, but it's just a simple way that I feel like that was a turning point for me. A turning point, again, it happened right around midlife, to say, I don't want to spend my life building my career and look back and say, I missed these precious years of investing in the people that are going to be with me, Lord willing, at the end.
As long as we're talking about careers, you do address that as well, because men, it seems like particularly, are wrapped up in their careers. I mean, that's who we are outside of our work. We kind of struggle with that. You know, Ecclesiastes has helps us work through some of those questions too, doesn't it?
It does. And I feel like, again, one of the benefits of this ancient book, it was written so long ago. And the more that we study this, these issues are exactly the same today. They haven't gone away. So you look at, again, you look at Solomon and think of all that he did. Think of all the things that he did. He ended up doing all of these building projects. It was incredibly successful. There was no one more successful than him. And his conclusion is, I hated life because the work that's done under the sun was grievous to me. And so, again, someone who, we literally get the word paradise for the word that he had for his gardens. His gardens were paradise. We can see from the ruins, we can see his cisterns, we can see all of the things that he did, and yet his conclusion is all of this success, it didn't really ultimately matter. And yet today, you're exactly right. We spend our lives pursuing vocationally one success after another. And this is really, so grateful to Bob Buford, who wrote the foreword. I think that he was really one of the early people to prompt this conversation when he wrote the book Halftime, of saying, eventually you come to a point in your career where you say, what's it all for? What am I going to do at this point? And some people are going to stay, and they're going to choose to stay in their career, and I think they're going to do it differently. They're maybe going to see their company as an opportunity for them to really, really love on their employees and to be innovative about the way that they take care of their customers and suppliers. But it's no longer going to be about building themselves up. It's going to be about building people around. Other people, I have a friend, Chris, who decided at his, shortly after his 40th birthday, he was an executive in a telecommunications company, and his decision was to take a break. And so the way that he took a break was working for Hope International, moving with his family to Rwanda, and having a totally different experience that, from a career track perspective, maybe didn't make a sense, but for a perspective of what am I going to do with my life? I've always wanted to do something like this. Maybe now is the moment. And he was just free from only thinking about career, his career trajectory in a professional setting as the only thing that mattered to him. And so, again, this is where the questions are different. The questions are the same, but the conclusions could be different. Some are going to choose to stay exactly where they are. Other people are going to make a significant transition. But the point is simply that we're not going to let our careers control us. We're going to make decisions based maybe more courageously that aren't going to be based on fear, but are going to be based on a bold recognition that this life is short. We've been given today. How do we want to spend it?
Peter, one of the quotes in the book, you quote Dallas Willard, his advice was to a friend was to ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. That's a powerful statement. How have you maybe worked through some of that?
It was interesting. Remember when technology was supposed to help with productivity and give us more time, and we were going to be down to a 4-day work week because technology was going to... I don't know about you, but that's not my experience. It's possible to literally wake up, jump onto email before you've even gotten out of bed. It is possible to the last thing that you're doing to be working. And so instead of giving more margin, it has given us less a margin. And so this idea of busyness, it has become a hallmark of modern day life. And I think the first part is just to recognize it, and maybe to recognize that the current path that we're on, maybe that is not the one that that we have to be on. So one kind of practical thing is just, again, because knowing my own temptation with technology, when I come home, I put my phone literally in the drawer. I hear more and more families that are doing this, of just having a no screen zone. And so over dinner, there's no one who's getting interrupted. And so I literally, from the moment that I get home to the moment that my kids are in bed, my phone is safely away in a drawer, and almost to create some sort of a guardrail from myself. And so that's one thing. Otherwise, there's a new term called digiphrenia. It's a word that was described how technology allows us to be in more than one place at the same time. And so we think we're in both places. We think we're still tapping away on an email while we're also with our kids. And yet the reality is we're not doing either of those well. And oftentimes, in our attempt not to miss anything, we actually miss everything. And so this creating, again, just simple guardrails to help us protect, again, time and space for health, for margin, for devotion, for relationship, I believe that simple practices can help us. And I think ultimately the best thing was designed by God, who knows us perfectly, who designed us. And so this idea of Sabbath, where literally one out of seven, there's a change of pattern, there's a change of behavior. And yet I think in today's modern world, that is the one of the Ten Commandments that is oftentimes seen as a simple suggestion that is glossed over, and yet we need it. And so whatever it is, in my family, it is trying to honor the Sabbath, to have that as a day that is set aside for relationships, for recharging, to have simple ways to not let technology control us.
You know, I was thinking about, despite all our efforts to plan and prepare, and we build discipline in our lives, we try and stay fit, life doesn't always go as we planned. How do we handle the unexpected? And out of that, there's this sense of loss of control that comes our way from time to time.
What is the promise of Jesus? In this world, you will have troubles.
Yeah.
You don't see that kind of crocheted on pillows or put up on wall plaques. And yet, that's maybe the expectation. That, again, then we enjoy these moments that we're given. But we expect that there are going to be challenges. We understand that this world is broken. And we look forward, longing, hoping, waiting, expecting a day when it's all going to be made right again. And so that's kind of how I want to live, not to be surprised when things don't go according to plan, but actually to use those moments to have even more hunger, more excitement about the day that's going to come.
Peter Greer is president of Hope International, and he's author of the book 40/40 Vision, Clarifying Your Mission in Midlife. If you want to hear that full interview or my earlier interview this hour with Jeff Mannion on his book Dream Big, Think Small, you'll find them all posted on our website, the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com.